G'day listeners, this is Martin from Tasmania, Australia, and you are listening to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Welcome back everybody to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. For those about to rock, we salute you. We are here to take on the second part of the Appetite for Destruction versus Back in Black episode. Jason, how are you doing?
It's been too long. I'm glad to be back. Yes, I'm let loose from the noose. That's kept me hanging about.
Well, I'm just thunderstruck, so let's start rocking the free world.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, discussing and debating the iconic and the forgotten of 80s and 90s pop culture with your co-hosts, James D. Graves and Jason Colvin.
We are here today to talk about the AC/DC album Back in Black. Last week, we talked about Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses. And once we're done with going through today's episode, we will give you our final judgment as to which album we think is the best. Jason, do you know what you're going to pick yet?
I do know what I'm going to pick. This was a really fun episode to put together because, I mean, you and I went back and forth. We had to find two worthy opponents.
Right. We've got Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson face to face. Here we go.
That's right. That's
who's going to bite somebody's ear off.
Let's do it, man. Let's do it.
All right, we're going to jump right in. So we're talking today about AC/DC, who has a unique history. They started off and got famous with a singer that was not the singer for Back in Black.
They went through a couple of singers before they got to the singer of Back in Black. When they started out initially, they had this guy named Dave Evans.
Yeah.
Mark Stone and the guy for the Police need to form this band called Near Misses, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So Dave Evans was the guy. They had had a guy or two before that, but I'll rewind just a little bit. You know, we gave you the story of the Van Halen boys' history. And with this band, there's no question that Malcolm and Angus Young are the backbone of the band. They're the founders of the band. They're the consistent. And so some interesting things about them. You know, this is regarded as an Australian band, but most of the members, the core members anyway, were transplants. They were immigrants from Scotland. Bon Scott, who ultimately became the lead singer, came over in the 50s, and Angus and Malcolm came over with their family in 1963. Scotland had had what was called the Big Freeze, which was like the worst winter on record. And so everybody was kind of miserable, 8 feet of snow, and their dad sees a advert on the telly, as they say, and it's given, you know, financial help for somebody who wants to travel down to Australia. And so he and 11 other family members travel down there, and it's down there that their older brother George starts a band that within just like 6 months or so has a reasonably popular success. And the boys see his fame and they're like, hey, I think we could do that.
Their brother George was a member of the band called the Easy Beats, who had a hit song in America.
Yeah.
And they were inspired. They're like, hey, our brother put together a couple of guys, made some music, and all of a sudden he's famous.
Yeah. I mean, they came over there and they're poor. They were staying in a hostel, you know, it was a meager means that they existed by. And then 6 months later, they've got cameramen on their front doorstep wanting to take pictures of the new rock star.
Their famous brother. That's right.
Right.
They grew up, though, in a musical family where they would sit around the piano and they would play songs. And for them, this was normal behavior. They just assumed every family did these things.
Right. Just kind of like reading for them. Everybody just learned how to play something.
Yeah.
Angus's first instrument was actually a banjo that he strung as a guitar so that he could play it like a guitar. And he and Malcolm formed a couple of high school groups, separate groups. And eventually they decided, you know what? These groups aren't working out. How about we do something together? And then George, the older brother, got home and they said, hey, we've started a band together. And he goes, I'll give that one 2 weeks.
These were two brothers separated by 2 years and they constantly fought.
Yeah. And it's interesting to hear that 2 weeks for guys who ended up staying together from 1974 until Malcolm had to leave the band due to health issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. 40 years.
It's a great run for them. Great run for them. I think it's interesting where they got their name from, their band name.
Yeah.
their sister Margaret had a sewing machine, and she just made the comment something about her sewing machine, and on the back of it has this little label that said AC/DC.
Yeah.
And AC/DC. Malcolm heard that, and he's like, hey, that's pretty good, you know? And that to them meant power and energy, and they thought, well, that's a pretty good name.
Yeah, we're electric. Not much longer, they're riding in a taxi cab, and they tell the cabbie their name, and he's like, are you guys gay? And they're like, what?
Speaking of their name.
Yeah.
So it really did just come from the back of a sewing machine. Everybody has tried to
put different meanings for it.
Yeah. I had heard all the rumors about how Antichrist, devil's children, or after Christ, devil comes. All this sort of, they just thought it was pretty cool little electrical term, you know?
There's this thing that happened when we were kids where this guy in California was murdering people as the Night Stalker. As it happened, you know, the sheriff's office found a hat that he had left behind at one of the murder scenes, and it happened to be an AC/DC hat. The sheriff's office was like, we use that information to try to get people to go, hey, maybe I know who that is. You know, it's an identifying. But the press took it and went an entirely different direction and tried to make them into this demonic band and Antichrist thing. It kind of dumb.
If you liked AC/DC's music, you were suspected of being a serial killer.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, to be fair, they did have a lot of stuff that would have caused. I mean, if I was a parent back in the 80s, I'd been like, wait a minute. There's a guy with the devil horns and devil tail on this album. And the song's called what? Highway to Hell. Okay. No.
Right. Exactly.
I think they like to do things that were controversial and stir up excitement about themselves.
It's not a new idea. By any stretch.
No. And it's not a satanic band.
Right. Right.
So the boys have their band. They go through a couple of singers, end up with Dave Evans for a little while, who's very much a glam rocker. He's putting on the makeup. He's got the spandex going on. And the guys are like, this is not working out. I don't like this.
They didn't like the glam thing at all. But they did have a moderate hit with him. The song was called Can I Sit Next to You, Girl?
Yep.
Sounds like a Beach Boys tune, but it's a rocker.
Yeah. So they decide, we're tired of Dave. We want somebody else who can rock a little bit. While they have been going through this experience, Bon Scott, whose given name is Ronald, but they called him Bon, which was short for Bonnie Scotland, because he was
from Scotland,
right? And so he had a rough go of it. He's kind of like Axel, you know, he had some run-ins with the law. Maybe punched a cop in the face here and there, you know, like you do.
Right.
And he had been involved with a couple of bands, one of which was named Fraternity.
He was in Fraternity, the Valentines, and the Spectres.
The Valentines. Yes. He had been in those bands, but had kind of, you know, reached the end, hadn't been much of a success, had played with some guys and done some tours, but really was just kind of at a low point. And one night in 1974, gets in kind of a yelling match with someone in the middle of the night in one of the bands and drinks. I mean, he'd been drinking all day, which he did for most of his adult life, and jumped on a motorcycle and had a wreck that almost killed him.
That's right. Very near death.
At that same time, as he was recovering in the hospital, the boys are looking for a new lead singer for the band. And somebody says, hey, you know, what about having Bon Scott? And they're like, guy who drives the van?
Right.
When you do these things, you find that there's never a completely consistent history on exactly what happened. But basically, Bon Scott had kind of acted as a van driver or roadie for the band, played drums with them here and there.
Yeah.
And initially, the idea was suggested to him. Somebody, and I think it may have been George, said, he's too old. And I'm pretty sure that motorcycle accident has messed him up permanently. I don't think he's a good fit. And then Bon goes to see AC/DC playing, and he watches them, and he's like, he wanted to join the band right away, but he was like, man, they're really young. I don't know if they're mature enough to handle me. But once they got together, they were immediately brothers.
You know, Angus, at that moment when Bon wanted to join the band, Angus was only 19, Malcolm was 21, and Bon Scott was 29. So he's an older guy. He's been around the block a few times.
Yeah. And, a few times.
And he went to him and he's like, hey, give me a shot. You know, I think I can, I'm a better singer than the guy that's been traveling with you guys, you know, give me a shot. I can do this.
Yeah. And then
when he stepped in, man, it took off.
It was magic.
Okay, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages.
And so, yeah, kind of the rest is history for a time there. They put their first record out in 1976.
That album is called High Voltage. And actually, that's the first international release. I think they had a couple of albums that were Australia only, and they kind of combined those two to make an all-star one called High Voltage, which was released. Most people are familiar with that one in 1976.
And it's interesting. You know, you look at the album covers, the center of attention is Angus.
Right.
You know, typically, I mean, even with Van Halen, David Lee Roth was in the front. I mean, Eddie was there, but it was, you didn't have only the guitar player on the front. But Angus had done a heck of a job kind of developing this persona with a schoolboy outfit. This is the other way his sister was involved, right?
That's it. That's right. So his sister, Margaret, who came up with the name AC/DC, also commented that Angus still looked like a schoolboy.
Right.
And he thought, well, heck, if I look like a schoolboy, I might as well still wear the schoolboy outfit.
He had been trying to find a shtick. He had tried Superman parody called Super Ang, and he had tried a Spider-Man and a Zorro outfit. But when he's a small man, he was young at the time anyway. I mean, a young guy, but he's a small young guy. And so the schoolboy outfit worked. It was kind of this, hey, is there a little kid up there shredding the guitar right now?
I saw this. This is really interesting. Angus is 5'2".
Yeah.
Malcolm is 5'3".
Yeah.
Brian Johnson's only 5'5".
Yeah.
So the power that these guys put out, these guys are pint-sized rockers, but they are awesome.
Yeah, they, to kind of promote the schoolboy image, they told everybody that Angus was actually 5 years younger than he really was.
When you think about what I was doing at 19, I mean, he's touring the world, doing all this crazy stuff, playing crazy guitar. He's a rock star.
All these guys were high school dropouts who became world touring, world-changing rock stars.
Malcolm and Angus dropped out of high school exactly at 14 years, 9 months, which is legally the minimum you can go to school.
They're chomping
years,
on the bit.
9 months, I'm out of here.
My school birthday is tomorrow.
That is a math assignment that you chumps are doing tonight. I ain't doing it.
So they became a pretty big hit in Australia, and then with the release of High Voltage, they started to get some international success. It took them a little while to become a success in America, though.
It did. I heard one of the ways they did it was they would play anywhere, anytime, all the time. 10 people, 5 people, 300 people, didn't matter. They're play and play and play and play and play. And that's something that the Beatles actually did in Hamburg. They would just play so much, they got good at their craft.
Right.
And people, they made a name for themselves.
Yeah. You and I have both read the book Outliers that talks about how the Beatles would play in that strip club in Hamburg, and they wouldn't have a half hour set. They wouldn't have an hour set. They would have an 8 hour set in a strip club. So the people aren't really looking at them. So they were like, okay, we got to find some music that's interesting for people to listen to because we're not the focus of the show here. And they got so much practice just as kids that by the time they hit America in 1964, they were already experts in their craft.
So after High Voltage, they moved to London in 1976 in an effort to become international rock stars.
It's interesting, you know, to hear these guys talk because they don't sound Scottish, but they also don't exactly sound Australian either. That's funny because Brian Johnson at this time is playing in a band called Geordie, which refers to a group of folks who have a very unique style of speaking from the UK. If you've seen Britain's Got Talent, the two guys who are, you know, off to the side, who like introduce people and stuff, those guys are both Geordie guys. And it's that kind of, the accent is intriguing to me.
You know, just kind of on that note, I read that, so these guys are short, they kind of look like truck drivers, they kind of talk funny. They had trouble getting into their own gigs sometimes because people didn't believe they were the rock stars that they are. They looked like just these average guys off the streets, the little scruffy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Bond was missing a few teeth. He's an older guy. I mean, he looks too old. They look too young. It's all very, wait a minute, this guy's got tattoos and chest hair, and this is supposed to be a lead singer for a rock band. I don't understand what's going on here.
So after High Voltage, also in 1976, they release Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap.
Dirty Deeds and the Done Dirt Cheap, yeah.
But they don't stop there. In 1977, they release another album, Let There Be Rock.
And the music was good and the music was loud.
Then in 1978, notice they're not taking any time off at all. They release Powerage.
Album, tour, album, tour.
It's just like the Van Halen episodes we talked about. Flashback if you haven't heard episode one of Van Halen. Then again, in 1979, they released an album called If You Want Blood, You've Got It. That was a live album.
All of those albums were produced by their brother, George. I guess he was the seasoned expert at the time that they started the band, but you know, he's helping them out through this process. And he's the older, wiser guy who can put these albums together and make them sound good.
Well, then in 1979, we have an album called Highway to Hell.
Yeah, this one was not produced by their brother, Georgie. This one was produced by Mutt Lange.
Mutt Lange, we love him. He produced Pyromania. He produced Hysteria. He produced some albums by Celine Dion and Shania Twain. He also did Heartbeat City by the Cars, Back in Black.
Michael Bolton.
This guy knows how to make hits. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he does. And Highway to Hell was one of the earlier ones that he had done. And he had not quite gotten to the stage that he was at by the time Pyromania came under his control. But he was definitely a guy who knew what he was doing and was still meticulous and was still making hit albums.
Yeah, they would talk about how they'd get started about 10 in the morning and then they would come in and record. And he would stay until 3 o'clock in the morning, just be a studio rat.
Yeah. Then, just as things are taking off, they're on their meteoric rise, February 19th, to be exact, 1980, Bon Scott goes out drinking with his friends. And Bon Scott was always the guy who wanted to keep partying, who wanted to drink a little bit more, stay up a little bit longer. And he and the boys had gotten together just a few days before. And they had said, here are some of the songs that, you know, here's the music, some of the songs that we're working on for our next album. He even played drums. There's a couple of demo tapes out there that have him on the drums on those songs. But he walks out the door and they say, just a couple more weeks, man, and we will have these songs ready for you to put lyrics to. And that was the last time they saw him. He went out drinking with a friend of his. And, you know, like I said, he wasn't a stranger to drinking. They had a good time, got home late that night or early the next morning. And he was sleeping it off, as they say, except that when the friend came out the next day, he found him lifeless in the car.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too graphic, but the story that I read up on was, he passed out in the passenger seat. His friend leaned the chair back and put a blanket on him. Couldn't rouse him. Couldn't bring him inside. So just let him sleep in the car. And overnight, he aspirated some of his vomit and passed away that way. The death certificate says acute alcohol poisoning, death by misadventure.
And there are all kinds of conspiracy theories out there that we don't need to get into. We sure don't have the expertise to talk about that sort of thing. But the point is, they're shooting up like a rocket and then suddenly the pilot's gone.
Yep, that's right. I do think it's interesting. Bon had several lyrical ideas for the album, the unnamed album that was coming. Those ideas were abandoned in favor of Brian's lyrics.
Yeah.
But AC/DC manager Ian Jeffrey claims to still have a folder that contains lyrics for up to 15 songs that was going to be Back in Black.
Yeah. The boys are notified of Bon's death. They have to, I mean, his mom's still down in Australia and they're up in the UK and they have to give her a call and let her know what's happened. And they go to the funeral. They are trying to figure out, does the band continue on? What do we need to do? And it's actually Bon's father that says, Bon would want you to go on. He would want you to continue with AC/DC and make it something great. And so they decide not to mope about. They decide to start playing and pick things back up where they had left them off. And then they start their search for not a replacement singer, because you can't replace Bon Scott, but a new singer to be their frontman. Okay, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. Please stay with us. We will be right back after these messages. So we know what happens. We know that Brian Johnson becomes the new lead singer, but do you know who the first person to recommend Brian Johnson to the band was?
No, who was it?
It was Bon Scott.
Wow.
So, yeah. So we mentioned earlier that Bon Scott was in a few bands before he joined AC/DC. And one of those bands was a band called Fraternity. Well, Fraternity used to do supporting gigs for this band called Geordie, which I mentioned just a bit ago, that had Brian Johnson as their lead singer. And they had had a little bit of success as well. But Bon Scott had seen them perform. And after seeing them perform, he came and told the young brother, he's like, "Oh man, I wish you could have seen this guy. He was amazing. He was like Little Richard." And Little Richard was Bon's favorite performer. And he was like, he did this whole thing where he fell on the floor and was spinning around like he was in agonizing pain. It was amazing. And he like sealed the deal. Like they came and like took him out in a wheelchair. It was, and I'm just, you know, I'm kind of imagining James Brown, you know, or they try to walk him off the stage and he goes back on. But as it turns out, Brian Johnson was actually, he had appendicitis at the time. He was actually rolling around the ground in pain. And they really did take him off to the hospital after it was over. But after Bond's passing, they had a fan that sent him a tape of Geordie and said, "You guys should really look at this guy." And they're like, "Hey, isn't this the guy that Bond talked about?" And then Mutt Lange, without knowing any of this, says, "I think you guys should listen to Brian Johnson. I mean, I think he'd be a really good fit for the band." And so by the time they started doing auditions with folks, he kind of was already the pick in their head.
That fan from Cleveland that mailed the album to the record company and said, "You guys need to listen to this guy.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you."
Yes.
"We don't know your name, but please hook us up on Facebook. Say, I'm the guy who contacted the record company on behalf of Brian Johnson."
So Brian Johnson, I mean, we talked in our episode about Journey, and, you know, Steve Perry was working on a turkey ranch when he got the call and said, "Hey, we want you to come sing for Journey." But Journey was nobody at that point. You know, they were the leftovers from Santana. The guy who took over for Steve Perry was working at the Gap. He was working at the Gap when he got the phone call that said, "Hey, we'd like you to come be the lead singer for Journey. Well, I've kind of got like a insurance now." And
right.
"Dude, Journey. Okay, I'll come out." So when Brian Johnson gets the call, they don't tell him who the band is. And he's like,
"This story, yes."
And he's like, "Okay, well, you want me to come down there, and you know, it's a bit of money. Can you at least give me the initials?" And the lady who's talking to him on the phone goes, "Yes, the initials are ACDC."
And oh my gosh.
He's still hesitant, you know? He's like, "Oh man, I just don't even know that this is worth it," because he had kind of reached the end. Like so many of the guys that we've talked about, he's just kind of given up on the music industry and had started a little car repair place, you know? He's like, "I don't know, you know.
Famous fixing windshields."
Right. "Well, think about it."
"Got some white walls."
And so, as we mentioned in our Spaceballs episode, he happens to get another call near the same time that says, "Hey, we got a paying gig for you." "Oh, all right. How much does it pay?" £350. "Oh, solid. What's it for?" "Hoover vacuum." So Brian Johnson thinks, "Okay. Well, I'm getting paid enough money that it makes it worth the trip down there. I guess I'll go ahead and audition for AC/DC while I make my vacuum commercial."
I love the Hoover vacuum cleaner commercial. It is amazing. It's no Back in Black, but I mean, you know, come on.
It's good, though. It's really good. It's a beautiful mover. And then he's got to go over and sing for AC/DC. And these guys are world famous at this point. And he's petrified. He talks about sitting in a cafe across the street, too scared to go over, having a bit of tea and a biscuit or something. And the pastry's so crusty that he can't even eat it. And he's like, "Ah, F it. I guess I better go do this." And just walks across the street. Well, meanwhile, Malcolm and Angus and the boys have been auditioning all these other lead singers, and they are like, hey, where's Brian? He was supposed to be here like an hour ago. And somebody goes, oh, I think he's downstairs playing pool with the roadies. And they're like, well, okay, well, at least he plays pool. And so they call him up. And the first thing Malcolm does is hand him a beer and says, I'm sure you're thirsty. And he's like, oh, I bet I could drain this thing right now. You know what? I think I will. And he drains the beer. And they say, well, what would you like to perform? And he says,
it was by Ike and Tina Turner. It's called Nutbush City Limits.
And so they hear him say that and they're like, oh, thank God. Every other person that's been in here singing says Smoke on the Water. Yeah. Okay. That's good. And so they do that and it goes pretty well. And so they say, well, what else have you got? And he had put his band back together at that point, but they were just doing small club shows. But they always, as their closing song, would play Whole Lotta Rosie. And so he says, I can do Whole Lotta Rosie. And I'm like, right on. And so they play it, he sings it, and they know immediately, this is our man. So they send him back home, and a little while later, they're like, hey, can you come down for a second audition? And he's like, guys, you know, it's kind of expensive for me to come down there. And they find a way to get him down there. He sings with them again. That night, he stays at a hotel with one of the roadies, and the roadie guy is like, I think you got this, man. And he's like, no. He has no hope. He has given up hope on this thing. He goes back home. He continues working on cars. He continues playing small gigs and says, oh, hey, to his band at the time, says, oh, by the way, guys, I went and had a sing with AC/DC. And they're like, what? Oh, I had a sing with AC/DC. And they're like, oh, cool. And then they go play. And that right. was all the conversation that they had, you know. And then he gets a call on his dad's birthday. He had gone back to living with his parents, came to the house, had bought his dad a bottle of whiskey for his birthday, but comes in and nobody's there. And the phone rings and it's Malcolm Young. And he says, so we're going to be leaving in a couple of days to go record this new album. Do you think you can make it? And he's like, are you serious?
Did I get it?
What do you mean? And he's like, yeah, so we're just thinking, you know, we got to leave pretty quick. So are you in? And he says, can you call me back in 10 minutes? I just want to make sure that somebody's not screwing with me right now. You know, Malcolm's like, okay. Hangs up the phone, calls him exactly 10 minutes later and says, okay, so can you go? And he's like, Yeah, okay. He's not using that language. He's using better language than that. He puts the phone down for a second, says the F word, gets back on and says, yep, yeah, I'll find a way to do it. And then he hangs up the phone and he's like, I'm the only one here. So he pops the top on the bottle he bought for his dad because he figures I need a drink, and he chugs himself a celebratory drink by himself. And then 1 week he is in the Bahamas with Mutt Lang and AC/DC recording what would become one of the greatest albums of all history.
It's incredible. These stories are amazing. This is why nobody should ever give up on their dream. Steve Perry was working at a turkey ranch. Brian Johnson was fixing windshields. 1 week later, he's in the Bahamas recording Back in Black.
Okay, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. Please stay with us. We will be right back after these messages.
All right, that is how the band came to be. Are we ready to dive in track by track on this one?
Yeah, and just real quick, just, you know, briefly touch on the recording process. You know, it sounds really nice to be recording in the Bahamas. You know, we kind of talked about the Police and their beautiful island that they were on as they were recording. It was not exactly that for the AC/DC boys. It was a kind of a cement and mortar type of place. The only reason that they went to the Bahamas is because there were no recording studios available in the UK. And also it worked as a tax advantage to record down there instead of recording in the UK. This recording studio that they had was run by this old Bahama lady who in addition to giving them a room with a table and a lamp on the table, gave them a stick. It's like a harp, like a fish harpoon stick to put by the door. And she said, you got to be careful. Sometimes at night, these wild Haitians will come down and try to rob you. Okay, this is not the Bahama. This is not the Bahama vacation I was expecting. But again, you know, you put all these circumstances together and somehow you come out with Back in Black.
Amazing.
Kroger Delivery has one mission, to save you time and money by delivering fresh groceries at great prices right to your door in refrigerated trucks. Enjoy 1 hour delivery time slots to get what you need on your time. All with professional drivers who always deliver. No tipping required. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Save $25 on your first two Kroger delivery orders when you clip your digital coupon online or in the app. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
All right, so Back in Black is released July 25th, 1980. Let's talk briefly about the cover, okay?
Okay, yeah.
First of all, the title Back in Black was a phrase that Malcolm Young had in his head for a while, but he knew in his brain, this is what I want the album to be called, Back right. in Black.
Yep.
As a tribute to Bon Scott, the cover of the album is all black with just some basic white outlined letters saying AC/DC, Back in Black.
Yeah, the boys had wanted it to be just straight black, and the record company was like, not okay with that, but if you'll just put your name in white lettering, that's fine.
Yep. Okay. So are we ready to do this? Let's do this.
Let's jump in. I'm excited about this first song. I listened to this album again today, cranked it up, pumped my fist as I drove home. So the first song on the album is
Hell's Bells.
Okay. So we've talked before about how Mutt Lang puts these albums together brick by brick. And this first song is such an awesome layering of sounds, because you start off with that bell, you know, and there's a story behind the bell. I'll get to it in a minute. But you got that bell and it's all you hear. It's like, are you coming to church? What's going on here? And then on your right speaker, it lays down that first guitar, you know, layer one, bell, layer two, guitar. Malcolm's guitar is over there. And then layer three, you get just little snippets of Angus's guitar coming in, you know, just little bits that's over here on the left speaker. They're doing this incredible job of using the stereo to its full advantage. And then the drums come in, layer four, and you're like, yeah. And then it all comes together. Bass comes in, which is, I mean, the bass on almost all their songs is just that straightforward boom, 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 boom. And it is amazing.
What a great start for the album. And like you said, it's layer, intensifies, builds to this great rocking song.
Yeah. And so there are literally thousands of AC/DC fans that, I mean, within a matter of just a few months have learned the lead singer to their band has just died. And 6 weeks later learned they've already got a new guy. And I mean, this is akin to like, you know, your parents get divorced and then one of them has a, you know, girlfriend or boyfriend in a month and a half. You're just right. Like, oh, what's going on? This isn't right. And so the question is, you know, like, how are the fans going to react to this new guy? And are they, I mean, if this album is dedicated to Bon Scott, is it going to be some sort of, you know, sappy sentimental tribute? But they don't do that at all. They give that ominous tone, and even the guitar has kind of an ominous feel to it, but it's, the song is Hell's Bells, which is kind of a nod to for whom the bell tolls. You know, it's come up several times, but the saying is, ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. And the idea is, don't worry about the dead, worry about yourself, worry about your life. And that's exactly what they do with this album. They say, Bond would not have wanted us to play some sappy ballad. He wouldn't have wanted some song, you know, about him. He would have wanted us to kick ass, and that's what we're going to do.
A few episodes ago, we talked about Jonathan Cain when he wrote Faithfully by Journey. He had kind of a supernatural experience where that song, he says, God gave it to him and just sort of supernaturally came through him, out of his hands, and he just wrote it down on a piece of paper, just flowed out of him. Something similar happened to Brian Johnson on Hell's Bells. It's supernatural. He's not a believer, but something weird happened to him, and he talks about it. He said, I don't believe in God or heaven or hell, but something weird happened. He was in his room. He said, I'll never forget. I just started to write and never stopped, and it just flowed out of my hands. I thought that was a really interesting story. Did you know that there's an AC/DC all-female tribute band called the Hell's Bells? B-E-L-L-E-S.
No, but I did know that there's a bluegrass band tribute to AC/DC called Hazy Dixie.
You're only young, but you're only dead.
That's good. That's good.
So he came up with the lyrics to this one midway through the recording of the album. He did a majority, if not all, of the lyrics in this album, which is kind of a big deal. I mean, they auditioned him to sing, but they didn't, you know, they just were like, hey, can you write any lyrics? And he, I guess, you know, it's
right.
Writing an entire album's worth of lyrics is a daunting task. And he had done quite a few songs and was just kind of out of ideas and was stressing about it. And Mutt Lang just, I guess, gets the feeling and goes. So he goes by his room and says, hey, you know, Brian, are you doing all right? He's like, man, I'm out of ideas. And like, as he says it, lightning strikes.
Yep.
Right. And then of course, you know, they're in the Bahamas where you get tropical weather just instantaneously. And so the lightning strikes and there's this really loud thunder that comes through. And Mutt Lang says, God, you hear that thunder? And Brian, just kind of with his head down, says, yeah, it's a rolling thunder. And Mutt's like, what? He says, rolling thunder. That's just what they call it in the UK. It's a rolling thunder. And Mutt says, write that down.
Right.
And then as they're talking, that this torrential downpour happens. And so in moments, you know, you talk about that divine inspiration. In moments, he goes from, I can't think of anything, to the first lines of his song, I'm a rolling thunder, a pouring rain, coming on like a hurricane.
That's great, man. That's awesome. Okay, so here's something that Hell's Bells means to me, all right? And we talked about this in our Major League episode, but I'm a baseball fan. Right?
Right.
Trevor Hoffman was a relief pitcher for the San Diego Padres in the 90s. And every time he took the field, they played Hell's Bells as an intimidation to the other team, right?
Okay.
So for me, Hell's Bells signifies Trevor Hoffman coming on the field and he's going to shut everybody down. However, this was one of the first, they call it entrance songs for baseball players.
Oh, yeah?
They got this idea from when Ricky Vaughn took the field and they played Wild Thing in Major League. So flashback to our Major League episode.
Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, the, you know, the line, you're only young, but you're going to die.
Yes.
I mean, there are these, I mean, it comes up in a few of the other songs. There are these references to death and drinking that are not in any way sentimental, despite the fact that a month and a half earlier, their lead singer had died because of drinking too much.
Right. Basically, every single AC/DC song is about either sex, booze, or rock.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's their. Yep. That's what they do.
And yeah.
They do it really well.
I don't know if Brian Johnson was inspired. I don't know if, like, if Bon Scott was speaking to him from beyond the grave, or if he just went, you know what? Bon had a lot of success with innuendo. Let me see what I can do with that.
I'm going to run with that. I think I got this.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the actual bell sound.
Yeah. So they needed a bell. You know, they've got this idea that the bell is going to be the perfect way to start the album, perfect way to start the song. and they can't get a good bell sound. And somebody says, why don't you just go to the church that's down the road and just use that bell? And so they're like, okay. And so they take their recording equipment and they go to record the bell. And every time they rang the bell, all these pigeons that are sitting around the bell would take off flying. And you had the sound of flapping wings on your recording of the bell.
Yep.
And they're like, okay. So we wait for the bell to quiet down. It's finally quiet again. They hit the bell. And by that time, all the pigeons had come back and there's flapping all over again. And they're like, well, balls, this is not going
to
work.
So they have to have a bell custom made, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they have a bell, a 2,000-pound cast bronze bell made by John Taylor. It's a replica of the Denison Bell in the Carillon Tower at Loughborough War Museum. Okay, I can't. If I mispronounce that, I'm really sorry. I've never been here. But when they recorded the sound effect for the bell, they used 15 microphones because the acoustics of the bell, you never know where the sound is going to come from.
Right.
Microphones. And then when they got the sound that they wanted, they slowed it down to half speed. So it gives it that real ominous boom.
Oh, nice. Okay. That's awesome. Well, and then of course, after they produced the album, they went on tour and they took the bell on tour with them. And they would start every show by lowering that bell down. And Brian Johnson would slam it with a hammer sometimes he would even run and jump and ring the thing. But it was a great stage prop that they had made just by needing to have the sound for the album.
If you're keeping track at home, there's 13 bell tolls, 4 before the music starts and 9 after.
All right. Okay. I did not count the bells.
Okay. The next song on the album is Shoot the Thrill.
So in just a bit, we're going to talk about Back to Black, which was the intro song for Tony Stark in Iron Man 1. And then for Iron Man 2, they used Shoot the Thrill.
It's so freaking good.
This song
is awesome.
Yeah, it kicks a whole lot of butt. And it's got the sexual innuendo in there and the dangerousness. You know, is this a real gun? Or are we talking about a male gun? Probably a little double entendre. Picked up on those euphemisms.
Yeah, so you touched on it. You're right. This, for my family, I mean, I know this song from Back in Black, but my boys recognize it as basically Iron Man's theme. Right. So when he enters in Iron Man 2, they play Shoot the Thrill. They also play this in the original Avengers when Iron Man enters. Brian Johnson was explaining the inspiration for this song. He talked about how this is about suburban neighborhood bored housewives who get into extramarital affairs and too much narcotics.
Yeah. The girls who want the bad boys.
This song, interestingly enough, was never released as a single and no video was ever made for it.
Yeah, it's crazy because this song is amazing. It was made to be a single. I can't figure out why they would not have done that.
I'm with you. This is one of the best songs on this album. It's a 5-star song.
But I mean, as I understand it, I think radio stations played every single song on this album at some point. Like, it's just not, it was, whether it was a single or not, the radio stations recognized this album is full of hits.
Yes. I mean, DJs definitely latched onto this song and played it anyway, despite not being released as a single. All right. This song's amazing. I love it. 5-star song. Moving on. Track number 3 is a song called What Do You Do for Money, Honey? Okay. So some of the lyrics on this song talk about calling out gold diggers and saying that he will not be set up by the women who are after his gold.
The gold digger song.
It's a gold digger song. It's a good song. It's not a great song.
I love this song. Yeah, no, I love this song.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's hard to maintain the Shoot to Thrill, Back in Black, Hell's Bells level of songs throughout, but
Well, they come back good. They come back with kind of their punching intensity that they had from their previous albums on this one. It explodes out, whereas the other ones were a build. This one is immediately in your face. Bam, bam.
Yeah, I like it. I definitely like it. Track number 4 is a song called Giving the Dog a Bone. This is going to be hard to remain family friendly as we talk about this one.
So is it giving the dog a bone or given the dog a bone?
I got given.
It will appear differently. Like, I think on the album it was G-I-V-E-N, but then like on iTunes it's G-I-V-I-N, and it has appeared as G-I-V-I-N-G in certain spots.
Either way, as I can best tell, this is a song about going to the store, buying a milk bone for your dog. I don't know. This song, I saw it described as very Spinal Tap-esque.
So you're saying there's a lot of subtlety going on here. Is that right?
There's some description that leads you to believe certain things. So I don't know. What do you think about this one?
This one is okay for me, but it wasn't something that I want to come back and listen to over and over again.
Here's the thing. In all honesty, here's the thing. If you like one AC/DC song, you probably like almost all AC/DC songs because they're very similar. It's heavy guitars. It's sex, booze, and rock. It's pretty simple rock, you know, right in your face. Some are just better than others. You know what I mean?
She's no Mona Lisa. She's no Playboy star, but she'll send you to heaven, then explode you to Mars. I don't know what he's talking about there. He's talking about doing ugly chicks. Sorry, family friendly. He's talking about having an ugly girlfriend or something. I don't know.
Well, she'll send you to Mars. It's okay. So
this is kind of like Whole Lotta Rosie part 2.
Nice. Good reference right there. Okay. Good song. Not a great song. Good song. All right. After Giving the Dog a Bone, that brings us to a song called Let Me Put My Love Into You.
I'm lost. What do we think we mean here on this one?
Well, you know, I have love to give, and so let me put it into you.
Let me put it on the line?
This song, okay, I've been waiting to talk about this song.
Oh my gosh, let me cut your cake with my knife. Oh my goodness.
All right, so this song has the distinction of being on the Parents Music Resource Center list of the Filthy 15. Have you heard about this list?
Yeah, this is the Tipper Gore thing, right? This is where all the senator wives got together and said, these songs are profane.
These songs are awful for our youth. Yeah, so
her husband's off inventing the internet and she's complaining about AC/DC songs. What's going on there?
Okay, so here's the Filthy 15. You ready for this?
Yeah.
So, Let Me Put My Love Into You. Okay, we get it. It's about sex. And probably not great for 14-year-olds to be saying that, you know, at home. But here's the – I was just curious about who else was on this list, right?
All right.
So just some other songs that you may have heard. A song called Darlin' Nikki. A song called Nasty Girl by Vanity. Sugar Walls by Sheena Easton. So far we got 3 in a row by Prince.
Right.
High and Dry by Def Leppard. We're Not Gonna Take It by Twisted Sister.
What?
Yeah, Rebellion type of attitudes. Violence, well, I think.
Yeah, that's a stretch right there.
Well, wait. She Bop by Cyndi Lauper.
What?
That song's about masturbation.
Okay.
And then finally, Dress You Up by Madonna.
I think they were going more for a look than an actual context of the song here.
The Filthy 15. That's just a portion. Now, some of those you're like, some of these titles, I'm like, whoa. Yeah, I definitely see what that's on there. But do you have anything more to say about Let Me Put My Love Into You? I can crack up every time I say that.
From what I understand is that all of those songs actually got a boost in ratings when they got put on the Filthy 15.
Oh, yeah. One of the songs is by Motley Crue, and Vince Neil was like, that was great for us.
Wait. These songs are dirty? Let's listen again.
Okay, so after Let Me Put My Love Into You, that ends side one of Back in Black.
Push stop.
Hit eject. Flip it over. Back in. Press play.
I mean, honestly, at this point, you're probably flipping the LP over.
In 1980, you probably are flipping the LP. You're probably right about that.
You might even be flipping the A-track over.
I had this on tape. Quick funny story about Back in Black. So I was on a ski trip with five of my high school buddies plus an adult to make sure we didn't get in too much trouble. So I asked my buddy, Chris Bauer, friend of the show, Chris Bauer, good friend of mine. His nickname was Bomber. Everybody called him Bomber. So anyway, at about 9 p.m., we're driving out to Colorado. I asked him, I said, hey, can I borrow your Back in Black tape? Because everybody's got their headphones on, their tape players. He's like, yeah, I'll give it to you when I'm done with it. I'm like, all right, great. So I fall asleep. At 3 o'clock in the morning, he whacks me on the forehead with Back in Black. And I'm like, what are you doing, dude? He's like, you wanted to borrow the tape. I'm like, I didn't want you to whack me in the forehead and wake me up. And we almost had a fist fight in the car on the way out to Colorado. So
this is why you had your mom confiscate his other tape, right?
That's right. All right. Side two, first track. Song Back in Black.
Oh, now I have to think of it. Oh, something's just happened. Somebody scattered this song. I'm going to have to look this up now. Okay, so forgive me for interrupting this awesome song for just a second, but somebody scattered the song and I'm going to put it on.
So, well, and, you know, I've got the notoriety came from the AC/DC, which I really took sale, which is the
So this song is very memorable to me for a couple of reasons. Number one, this is a song that we would cover this in my band. We did this song and I don't know why I was dumb at this particular point, but my drummer just had to say, okay, just wait until I hit the cymbal twice before you come in. Okay. I'm going to be playing and then it's going to go, shh, shh. Oh, that's going to be real quiet. And then you come in after that. I'm like, okay, I'll get it right this time. I promise.
This song is the best song in the album. This song blows me away. The guitars are so hooky, gorgeous, crunchy rock. Love it. Malcolm actually had the phrase, we talked about that. He had the phrase in his head, Back in Black, and he had the riff for the song before they really had the song. This was a warm-up exercise, kind of like how we talked about last week with Slash and Sweet Child of Mine. He would do this as a warm-up exercise.
Okay, so title track, right? Dedicated to Bon Scott. And one of the lyrics in this song is forget the hearse because I never die. I love it. Yeah. I mean, this is the perfect tribute to Bon Scott, right?
Yeah, it's basically saying, Bon, your spirit will live on. Your legacy will live on. I thought it was interesting that they were talking to, there was an interview with Brian Johnson. He was talking to Mojo Magazine in 2009. When they said, can you write lyrics? They gave him the music for this song. And he's like, well, I'll give it a try. And they said, here's the deal. The only thing is it can't be morbid. It has to be for Bon and it has to be a celebration. So he thought, okay. So that's when he came up with, you know, Nine Lives, Cat's Eyes, abusing every one of them and running wild. And the boys really, really enjoyed it. And they thought it was a great tribute to Bon.
Perfect tribute. And it was a perfect tribute for the fans to hear as well, for them to go, okay, this guy's one of us.
Yeah.
I think it worked. I think it totally worked. I think the fans embraced Brian Johnson. I'm sure there's a section of folks out there that were like, I don't really care for AC/DC after Bon died, but probably a really small contingent.
Yeah. The vocals on this are incredible.
Yeah.
For me, this is Brian Johnson at his best right?
And
it's that perfect sing and scream, you know. I mean, we talked about when Nirvana did it, but it's just that perfect, oh, that full emotion that sounds great.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, they have, I won't say it's, I mean, their voices are not the same, but there's a similarness to them. I mean, he can pull off the Bon Scott songs, right?
Right.
He can sing Highway to Hell and still kill it. But just, you know, just the voice, Bon Scott's voice was a gravel voice, right? I read his early morning ritual was to gargle with honey and red wine. And that kept his voice nice and raspy. and then Angus described Brian Johnson's voice as what somebody sounds like if you dropped a truck on their foot.
That's good.
He's got a screech. You know, Brian Johnson has got a higher pitched screaming style to his voice, but it fits with the AC/DC style perfectly.
What a great tribute. This album came out 5 months after Bon's death, and this wonderful, amazing song, and it's a tribute to Bon. I will tell you this. This is a cool thing that I found. Kurt Cobain was given a guitar on his 14th birthday, and the first song he learned to play was Back in Black. Okay, if you're a movie fan, you'll recognize this from Iron Man,
yep. A movie
called Grudge Match, Megamind, Karate Kid, the remake, the one we don't talk about.
Okay.
School of Rock and the Muppets.
The Muppets?
Not the Muppet movie, not the Great Muppet Caper, the Muppets.
Oh, the Muppets from like
2011.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
All right. So we're done with Back in Black. Starting off side two with an amazing song. Then we follow that one up with You Shook Me All Night Long.
This is the best song in the album.
Well, I can't really argue. The two songs are freaking amazing back to back.
Yeah, I can remember as a kid, the same cousins that as a 7-year-old, I went and saw my first three sets of boobies in the movie theater. When I became a teenager, I think I was probably 14 when I went out to see them again, and they had CDs, and they had a really large CD collection. They were musicians, and among the CDs was Van Halen 1. So that's how I got introduced to Van Halen 1, which we talk about, and which I still say is my favorite Van Halen album to this day. And then also Back in Black. And I made the best mixtape that has ever existed in the history of mixtapes using all of their CDs. But I was eclectic in my tastes, and so were they. And so now every time I hear You Shook Me All Night Long, when the song ends, I really expect Crazy by Patsy Cline to come on.
That's great, man. You've got that mixtape mixed up in your head.
Pavlovian response. Because that was what was next on the mixtape, and I listened to it 8 million times. So that's what I expect. Be weird for Pandora to do that, though.
Okay, here's an interesting thing for you. When I discovered AC/DC, it was in 1986, when they came out with the album Who Made Who, which was the soundtrack for Maximum Overdrive.
Right.
Right? This is a Stephen King movie with Emilio Estevez.
It's terrible. And
it was terrible. But the soundtrack was amazing. So it had all AC/DC songs. And one of them was You Shook Me All Night Long, along with Hell's Bells. So they plucked some from Back in Black. And that's how I discovered this song. What I really like about this song is when it starts, you have the guitar. And then as you continue on the left side of your stereo, and then it comes in with like the twinning guitar.
Yep. They bounce it back. They pan it back and forth. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's a great effect. This song reached number 35 on the U.S. Hot 100.
Yeah. This was the first single off of the album.
Yep. Released August 9th, 1980.
So Brian Johnson came up with this song because of all of the posters of American girls that were in the Bahamas. And I guess somehow he was thinking about his old car shop at the same time he was thinking about those girls, because she was a fast machine. She kept her motor clean.
She was the best damn woman that he'd ever seen. Yeah. I did hear him when talking about writing the lyrics to this. He, the line, "She told me to come, but I was already there."
Oh my gosh.
He thought he pushed it too far on that one, and they were like, "Nope, sounds great."
Yep, best line on the album, really.
You know who else has a version of this song? Who? Shania Twain and Celine Dion.
Yeah, that was like one of the worst covers of all time. Give me a second. He was a fast machine. He kept his motor clean. He was the best damn.
All right, so "You Shook Me All Night Long" was placed at number 10 on VH1's list of the 100 greatest songs of the 80s.
So I heard, I haven't verified this yet, but I heard that there were some copies of the single that were pressed incorrectly, and yeah, they accidentally put "Shake a Leg" on there instead of "Shook Me All Night Long."
Yeah, I heard about that. That would be a cool collector's item.
Yeah, apparently it's tough to get, but it's a collector's item. They're expensive.
Yeah, "Shake a Leg," not nearly as good a song as "You Shook Me All Night Long."
No, not a bit.
Okay, listen to this. I got this cool story. VH1 series pop-up video. You remember that?
VH1, the pop-up video. I have not thought about that in a long time. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so according to VH1's pop-up videos, the video for "You Shook Me All Night Long" featured a mechanical bull with a woman playing Johnson's lover riding the mechanical bull.
Yeah, I remember that.
During the filming, she accidentally jabbed herself with a spur. The roadie who came to her aid married her a year later.
Aww.
And Angus Young gave them a mechanical bull as a wedding present.
That's awesome.
How about that? That's cool. All right. We done with "You Shook Me All Night Long"?
Yes.
Okay. Two amazing songs back to back. Next
crazy
song up.
No, that's not it. Okay, sorry.
No. "Have a Drink on Me."
Again, I just love it that, hey, let's sing songs about drinking.
I know, we just lost our buddy to drinking, so "Have a Drink on Me."
Yeah. And I mean, it's perfect. It's exactly what, it's kind of their toast to him, right? It's like, hey, you brought us here. Thank you. We're having a drink on you.
Seriously, they don't see Bond's death as a PSA. They just see it as a celebration to continue doing what we're doing. So
lived life to the fullest.
Okay. "Have a Drink on Me." Awesome song. Not quite at the level as "Back in Black" and "You Shook Me All Night Long." Just another great song on this album.
So honestly, this one is one of my least favorites on the album. I know that this is I know this is one of the ones that fans love, and it's not bad. I don't hate it or anything, but this is not one that I get excited about.
Okay. So you and I talked earlier this week. Yeah. There are songs like my personal song rating. This is a turn it up song. This is a let it ride song, or this is a skip song.
Yeah. I'm probably going to fast forward through this song.
Okay. You're killing me.
Sorry, man.
I love this song. All right. So that does it for "Have a Drink on Me." Okay. Now we're on to "Shake a Leg."
Yes. Which I think, you know, whenever Angus Young plays, and he does a crazy, crazy show anyway, but he has this shtick that he does that is totally a Chuck Berry knockoff, where he kind of does the duck walk and he's kicking his leg out there, and it's this goofy, crazy thing. And every time I hear this song, I'm like, we're talking about Angus, right? This is Angus shaking his leg.
Exactly. On that note, I read a story. This really involves Bond, but one of the things that Angus used to do was he'd get on the shoulders of a roadie, right? And he'd play in the crowd. The roadie would carry him around the crowd, and he's 5'2". He's this little shrimpy guy, and he's playing this killer guitar. And then the roadie would bring him back up on stage. He'd put him up on Bond's shoulders, and he'd play on Vaughn's shoulders.
Right.
But if he got a bad saddle, he would say, me balls, put me down.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right. So Shake a Leg is an awesome song, too. It's a good song. We talked about how this was printed on some of the You Shook Me All Night Long singles, and that has become a collector's edition. It's a good song. I mean, it's not the world's best song, but it's good.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on
it? Again, this is, you know, you pointed out that there's not a lot of variation in the sound in these songs, right?
Right.
And so some of them, I mean, the great thing is that they're great songs. So if you're going to repeat something great, that's good. They're all fist pumping. They've all got that solid punchy guitar that, you know, doesn't have the reverb. It's just bump, ba-da-dump right there in your face. But some of them don't sell me the way that others do. And if I'm listening to that and I'm thinking, okay, this is the seventh time I've heard this kind of sound, and it's not just blowing me away this time.
On that note, you're exactly right. There's not a lot of variation. So if you like one song, you probably like most of them. Some of them strike your ear a little bit stronger than the others. But notice so far there have been no ballads, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you heard this story, but at the time, the production company, the producers came in and basically put their foot down and said, you guys have got to come up with a ballad. Your peers are writing ballads that are selling their albums like crazy. You guys are going to come up with a ballad. And they said, we don't know how to do it. Like, we don't know where to start. We've never done one. And so the producers are like, all right, here's what you do. Think about your last girlfriend. Write some lyrics down. We'll send in a guy to help you. All right. So after this, they gave it the good old college try. And when the producers came in to listen to the results, they just got up, shook their head, walked out of the room, and said, you guys just keep doing what you're doing.
That's good. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I heard a ballad from AC/DC. I can't. It just would be wrong, right?
It just doesn't go together. Yeah.
It'd be like Celine Dion singing an AC/DC song.
Exactly. Exactly. Like putting mayonnaise on a steak. I mean, just, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the last song on the album is a song called Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution.
So I've said now, hey, I've heard the same song, you know, the same style of song over and over. This is one where I was getting to that point, but I was like, oh, hey, this is different. This is bluesy. This is more kind of, I'm grooving here a bit. And you got Brian Johnson, who apparently Mutt Lang just told him, hey, just say something over this. I just need something, you know, so that I know that your microphone's working or something like that. And so Brian Johnson does this kind of, you know, preacher-esque kind of speech to the working man, and Mutt left it on.
Hey there, all you middlemen, throw away your fancy clothes. And while you're out there sitting on a fence, so get off your ass and come down here. Because rock and roll ain't no riddle, man. To me, it makes good, good sense.
Yeah, this song, yeah, I mean, on an album full of great music, this song might be number two for me. I really, really dig this song a lot. They throw you a curveball at the end. They finish with something that is unique. And it's not so unique that you're like, what is this? It's right. Still AC/DC. The guitar still comes in here in a little bit, and it still kicks some major butt, but it has got a groove to it that the other songs don't have. Not that they're bad. It's just that they don't have that kind of groove that this one has.
Okay. So I love hearing that from you. This song starts out slow, but it has a building power, and it comes full tilt. This is a great, great song for me on the album as well. This one blows my skirt up, as you would say. But this song is similar to Pour Some Sugar on Me. We talked about when we covered Hysteria, mm-hmm. that Mutt Lang got to the end and said, all right, guys, we got some good, really good, solid songs here, but we need one more, right?
Right.
So initially, they only had 9 tracks for Back in Black, but they thought they needed one more song. So Mutt Lang said, all right, guys, get to work. Angus and Malcolm wrote this song, the music for the song, in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah, and then it caps off this album. So good.
Yeah. So I'll say this before we get into our final judgment. They had a formula that they put into play here.
Yes.
And that formula worked.
Oh, yes. It still works.
It really does. And the songs, they last the test of time. This album is a great album.
Okay, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages.
I think at this point, unless we got more to talk about, it's time to jump into Final Judgment.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm going to let you go first this time.
Okay, before I get to Final Judgment, I did want to bring up something really quick. These two albums that we're comparing are similar, and they're both rock, blues-based rock. They both have that screechy, strong guitar, strong vocals, really turn it up, pump your brains out type of music. But these are both all-time best-selling albums. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Now, for whatever reason, it's difficult to pin down an exact number on album sales.
Right.
I have seen AC/DC's Back in Black listed as high as number 2 on all-time sales.
Right. Just behind Michael Jackson's Thriller. So just highest. Thriller.
Yes.
Highest for a band.
Yes. This one has it at number 7 overall, with Appetite for Destruction at number 13. So one of the things that really can't be disputed is that Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction is the best-selling debut album of all time.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So when I go to Final Judgment, here's what I'm weighing. I've got two, what I would consider front to back, every song on it is a non-skipper for me. 12 tracks, no filler, all killer. Back in Black. Back in Black is the same way. It's shorter. Okay. Now then, in my estimation, Appetite for Destruction is a better album, partially because it has more tracks, but we had never heard Guns N' Roses before. So I'm going to give AC/DC a little bit of a break here. They get a little bit of grace because this is their 7th album. And they did this 6 weeks after they lost their lead singer. So I'm not discrediting Back in Black at all. The accomplishment of Back in Black is incredible under those circumstances. But for me, if you put a gun to my head, the first one I'm getting out of my tape deck is Appetite for Destruction. What do you think?
Okay, so here's my thought. We've got two bands, and the last time that we talked, I said, hey, you know, what do you think the difference is between hard rock and heavy metal? And you had kind of an idea, and I shared what my thoughts with you were. But as we're going through this process, we're examining a lot of music, right? I mean, we've listened to Journey, we've listened to The Police, we've listened to Def Leppard, we've listened to Van Halen, we've listened to Nirvana, we've listened to Pearl Jam. And as I'm going through this and I'm trying to, you know, I'm looking at these musical categories and is this alternative music? Is this hard rock? Is this heavy metal? Is this something entirely different? What is this? And something that spoke to me about both of these bands, they both said the same thing. When people would try to paint them into a corner, like, are you metal or are you hard rock? They both said the same thing. We play rock and roll.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, and that's the, you know, it's the lyric to the Billy Joel song is the thing that's screaming in my head. It's all rock and roll to me, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I realize that there are some folks who hate on some of the bands that we have talked about in the past because of what they did to some of the bands that we're talking about right now. But it's all rock and roll. Ultimately, it is all rock and roll. And I love rock and roll. And right now, you can't get a good rock and roll song from anybody that I can find. I'm waiting for that comeback. I'm waiting for the AC/DC of the 2000s to show up, or the Van Halen or the Pearl Jam, whoever it is going to show up and say, guys, we're going to start rocking the free world again. I'm ready for that. So what AC/DC did was pure, simple rock. They had that formula. You have a punch guitar, you have loud drums, and you have euphemistic lyrics that are about the basics of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, man. I mean, that's sex, booze, and rock and roll, whatever you want to say. And so they set a standard. I mean, Back in Black has set the standard for what playing rock and roll in the 80s means. And so they're there at the beginning of the 80s setting the standard. And yes, it's great. It is unarguably one of the best albums of all time. But because they're so dedicated to their formula, there's a lack of variation that you have, that you get from other albums, and that you specifically get from Appetite for Destruction. Appetite is good old rock and roll, hard rock and roll, whatever you want to call it, but they have a little bit of a ballad that comes in from time to time. They've got a variation in their sound. They use a talk box here and there, and with doing all of those variations, they not only give you variety, but they maintain some kick butt tunes. And so I have to say, I'm on the same page with you. I think Appetite wins the day. It doesn't sold as many albums. It probably doesn't have as many diehard fans, but when I'm putting them on the scales, as you say, if I decide, okay, I got two tapes I can pick before I walk out the door, I'm going to pick Appetite.
Something that would be a complete oversight if we don't mention Brian Johnson, when he had to step away from AC/DC for a little bit,
yeah,
who filled in for him?
Axl Rose.
And Guns N' Roses, you sent me, they play Whole Lotta Rosie.
Yeah.
So
these, when they first came out, Melody Maker described them as a weak AC/DC.
You know, and here's the other thing. AC/DC has given us 30 years worth of great music. 40 years worth of great music.
Well, if they did it first in 76, it's nearly 45.
Gosh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So they keep, AC/DC has been pumping out music for decades.
Yeah.
Now, not all of it is Back in Black or Highway to Hell.
No.
Some of the albums, I don't know any songs on it, but.
Yeah, but they still, even in their 50s, they were making some hits.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Guns N' Roses, on the other hand, I keep waiting and waiting and waiting, and it's just not going to happen.
So, I think that Appetite will continue to stand the test of time. I think Back in Black will continue to stand the test of time. They're both albums that you can go back to over and over again. And I think without Back in Black, there is no GNR. There is no Appetite for Destruction. So you got to give them that consideration. But it's a hard choice. These were definitely two major contenders, but we'd love to hear from you guys. Tell us what you think.
For me, this is Appetite by a nose. But tell us where we're at. If you're all the way Back in Black, or if you hate Appetite, or if you hate Axl's voice, or if you think Bon Scott was the man and Back in Black and everything after that was terrible, let us hear from you.
Yeah, you can catch us on Twitter at Shirley Podcast, on Facebook at Shirley Podcast, or if you want to send us an email, we respond to every single email that we get, and that's shirleypodcast@gmail.com. We really appreciate all of the support that you continue to give us. We're overwhelmed by how many people have reached out and given us their opinion on things. It's fantastic. We love it. So please, join us in the debate here and let us know what you think.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter, and we will see you next time.
All music, images, and movie clips are used for the purposes of commentary and education in conjunction with the fair use agreement under the U.S. copyright law.
Kroger Delivery has one mission, to save you time and money by delivering fresh groceries at great prices right to your door in refrigerated trucks. Enjoy one-hour delivery time slots to get what you need on your time, all with professional drivers who always deliver. No tipping required. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Save $25 on your first two Kroger delivery orders when you clip your digital coupon online or in the app. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.